And welcome to Geek Actually, episode 65, the 19th of December. You guys are like holding your breath there, waiting for it to come in.
It wasn't that. It's like halfway through the introduction, like as you're doing it, you see Dave like slyly try to take another mouthpiece.
So I just kept looking at Josh going.
All right, for those who are listening to the audio podcast, Dave Kaczynski is eating his breakfast while we record the show. All right, so any rustling of bags and stuff you might hear is Dave's egg and bacon roll, I believe it is, which I believe is not kosher there, Dave.
It's kosher if you put a prawn in it because the bacon and the prawn cancel each other out.
I love it. Making up new rules as he goes along.
Haven't you met the Jewish people yet?
All right.
Kosher bacon. Bacon.
Bacon.
No, that's gay bacon, like a fagel of a bacon.
And what's coming in here, of course, is the chat room. So if you ever do want to join us live, we go out on Saturdays at 12 p.m.
Ish.
Well, yeah, usually at the moment it's 12:42, so we're running very late today. But you know what? It's the last live show of the year, so we're not going to stress too much about it.
Thank you for being nice, guys.
It's all right. It's the last live show of the year, as I say. Next week, there will be a Geek Actually, but it will be a pre-recorded show because we've got some guests coming on, and we're just going to wrap up what we think. Our guests don't even know this. It's going to be so off the cuff. It's basically we're going to wrap up with our favorite Christmas movies. What are our Christmas experiences or holiday experiences for Dave before he jumps on me?
Hanukkah.
Before he jumps on me, and I know you must go off and watch
and
like
Kwanzaa.
Ben-Hur and Ten Commandments and, you know.
Hebrew Hammer. Is a traditional Jewish kind of movie.
All right, save it for episode 66, which we're going to do later on. Anyway, so the meantime, though, this is 65. We are live at the moment. You can come and join our chat room at any time during the recording of a show, and we often read out the comments that are coming. They're coming in thick and fast right now, let me tell you. So we will be continuing to mention comments coming in through the chat room. We will be expecting comments from the chat room today, actually, because we are going to, on today's show, talk about all things Cameron. This is James Cameron.
Not Kirk Cameron?
Not Kirk Cameron.
I planned wrong. I did the whole growing pains montage last night. Now it's useless.
Now, we actually did plan for this show to have no news today. It was just going to be one big, long Cameron love fest. But unfortunately, two stories cropped up that are actually related to each other. They cropped up. They're Australian-centric. I do apologize to our overseas listeners, but there is actually a very interesting point that they may actually affect the rest of the world, and I'll explain that as we go a little bit further on into that. For the show dates for the rest of these holidays... Oh, what, sir? What? You need to go to the toilet or something?
No. I just wanted to know, because it's not in the show notes, at what point in the show are we going to go ahead?
We'll do it right after news.
Ting, ting, ting.
Yeah, right. We'll do it right after news. That way he has time to finish his egg and bacon roll. Now, before we go any further, my name is David McVeigh. I haven't introduced myself yet, and I haven't introduced my two esteemed co-hosts, Mr. Josh Philpott.
Esteemed. That was funny.
Mr. Josh Philpott and Mr. Dave Kaczynski. How are you guys?
Nom.
I'm over Christmas already.
It hasn't even started yet.
I know. I'm always over Christmas. I was telling everybody in the chat room before, I'm always over Christmas until just actually happens. And look, on the last 2 days of Christmas, it seeps in and I become...
And on that note, I think this sums up how Josh is feeling.
Enough of those hoots inviting me down there on such short notice. Even if I wanted to go, my schedule wouldn't allow it. 1 o'clock, wallow in self-pity. 4:30, stare into the abyss. 5 o'clock, solve world hunger. Tell no one. 5:30, jazzercise. 6:30, dinner with me. I can't cancel that again. Wrestle with myself. Loathing. I'm booked.
Yep.
Of course, if I bump the loathing to 9, I could still be done in time to lay in bed, stare at the ceiling, and slip slowly into madness.
How did you get my stream of consciousness?
I just love that clip. In fact, the other clip I really wanted to get, which I couldn't find, unfortunately, is the clip where he's actually reading the phone book and he's going, hate, 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 loathe and die. But anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel about the chat room.
All right, so this is our second Christmas special. We had one last year, which we termed the politically incorrect Christmas special because we had Mirren on the show, and my God, it was chaos. Let me tell you. This
will be the Hanukkah special.
This will be the Hanukkah special?
Hanukkah special.
So it's going to be a little bit tamer this week, and we do have Avatar to talk about, which was kind of a big event. Last year, we didn't have a big film. This year, we've got a great big
film.
I'm not
familiar with Avatar. Is that a new film? Small independent thing? No? Yeah.
All right.
Tiny little film.
He's finished his role, so maybe we should do it now. What do you think?
Yes, chaos and mayhem is ready to ensue.
Oh, right. Yeah,
now,
sure, why not?
We don't know if we're going to be catching up with Dave over the Christmas
Probably
period,
not.
Because you'll be off, you know, lighting menorahs or something.
I will be doing what I do every year, which is...
Drinking heavily.
Yes.
Yes. One.
One, yes. And I will be defiling your holiday by sleeping with as many Catholic schoolgirls as I can.
Oh, God. Come on, it's the holidays, man.
Exactly. I like to bring them some festive cheer.
So what we have done, Josh and I have actually brought in a couple of gifts for you.
Oh, God.
Okay, and I have to explain the one from me because... It was kind of an impulse. It's from Mirren and myself. And,
Jesus Christ.
And we saw this and we went, oh my God, that's for Dave. And so if you...
I didn't bring you guys anything.
That's
not
okay.
That I planned to.
Okay.
We figured...
You're Jewish. We don't expect anything.
Exactly.
But
I left my wallet in my other pants.
But please, you must... You must. This one's from Josh and the flat one is from Mirren and myself. No,
because this is the funny one. Let's do the actual Christmas present.
Oh, the
first.
Actual
oh,
Christmas
really?
Present.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel
okay.
Really
now,
bad.
This one needs a tiny little bit of explanation. Don't do the feeling. Let me explain first. Okay, so anyway, we all know that you have a wall full of little trinkets and so on and so forth.
I will actually take a picture of that and put it up on the Platforms website.
Wonderful. But anyway, there is something that's been lacking on your wall. And you just read the card. Brilliant!
That was fucking awesome.
But anyway, so I thought I'd give you this so that you can balance it out because it's slightly tipped to one side and you'll understand when you open the present.
Okay, so...
And do you want to tell everybody what's inside the card?
Josh and I have a familiar joke if you're not familiar with the awesome podcast known as Platforms. I think in the first episode I called Josh a faggot about 50 times.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I kind of reined it in since then because I didn't want to alienate our very high percentile gay gaming audience.
Exactly.
But Josh's card just says, 2-day faggot, Josh.
Just to say that the big flat one that Mirren and I are giving Scott's World in our chat room has basically said it's a Twilight calendar. I can assure you it's not a Twilight calendar.
Because seriously, I'll stab you.
Scott, man.
No, it is infinitely better than that.
Right. Now I must prepare and put a fake surprised look on my face. Oh my God, it's what I never wanted.
Look, it's you don't have anything from the Nintendo side of the world, so
for our audio listeners,
Heather's gonna love you, man.
For our audio listeners, Dave has just opened up a Mario figure, which is just
a stereotypical Italian plumber.
Hold it up for the camera. Hold it up for the camera, man.
Look, see,
that's very
Mario.
Cool. That's cool.
It's awesome.
Nice.
Look, it's Bob Hoskins.
I'm losing my breakfast.
Come on, Dave. Stay focused.
All right, come on. All right. Now, this other one.
No, there's something else in there.
Oh, there is something else in there. Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Now, faggot, you have to go online now and actually get some freaking apps for your phone.
Okay, that's a good idea, because I was going to look and go, music and stuff, but I illegally...
No.
we at Geek actually do not condone the use of...
Sorry, I have to keep the faggot card, so I'll always remember. That is awesome.
Hey, you got to move Mario out a little bit because the tree's obscuring his vision of the camera. So he's a little bit more.
I'm quite overwhelmed, guys. This is really nice. I mean, this is the best part of being a Jew.
Can I just say that Josh and I are really nice people?
Is this like a picture of me superimposed with Nicolas Cage?
No. Just to open it.
Because Mirren's involved.
Just open it. We saw this online and we had to buy it immediately. And you must read the little label.
Read the label.
Read it aloud.
I knew it was close. The Nicolas Cage Adventure Set. Fuck,
man. Now flip it over.
It's me and Weatherman, gone in 60 seconds. I'm looking confused.
I love the fact it comes with a little ghost.
A skateboard and a...
The ghost is for his career.
Now, for our audio listeners, what he's actually got is it's one of those vinyl sets where you can actually have the little figures and you put them onto a background and you can actually play with them. And so he's got a little Nicolas Cage adventure set now. Oh.
My favorite one is the... let's switch to your camera now, just for a second. Is the awesome, really confused one that we have here.
Right next to the ice cream cone.
The picture of that is...
And the ghost. Don't forget the ghost. And, of course, my personal favorite, which is the space helmet.
Yes, but no space suit.
That was for when he was going to be cast in Armageddon, and it never happened. And instead, I believe that we're almost in the rapture, thanks to Nicolas Cage's fantastic acting.
According to Octane, he says there's no scenery because Nicolas Cage chewed it all.
Do you know what I love, too? There's three versions of Cage, and each one has a greater receding hairline. That is just fantastic.
So that can go on your shelf of ornaments as well. There you go.
That is going to get framed, and that's going straight in the pool room. I'm overwhelmed. I am verklempt.
I saw that online, and all I could think was, "Oh my God, Dave must have it."
Now I'm gonna make him a Kal-El costume so he can be the Kryptonian god that he is. Until, of course, they make a Big Daddy doll from Kick-Ass after I fucked that movie.
All right. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you for your pagan holiday for things that don't exist.
And what we'll do is we'll just have to dilute that a little bit by playing a little bit of this.
Okay, Ike, you're my little brother, so I have to show you how to celebrate Hanukkah. This is called a dreidel. You spin it and see where it lands, and you sing this song. I have a little dreidel, I made it out of clay. And when it's dry and ready, with dreidel I shall play. Oh, dreidel, 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 I made you out of clay. Dreidel, 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 with dreidel I shall play. Now you try it, Ike.
Now you try it, Dave.
True story, I used to have a dreidel. Those who know me well know that I went to a very Orthodox Jewish school until I was 16 and was, don't laugh, chat room, studying to be a rabbi. So, yes, I know, I find that quite funny.
I'm not chat room, so I was allowed to smirk.
Shut up!
Yes, we used to have dreidels in the heezy every time the Hanukkah came around to town. It was awesome. Didn't get presents, though.
I'd just like to announce that Ben Stroll from Ben's Tech Show is in the house. How are you, Ben? Haven't seen you in a long time.
What's up, Ben?
I love the fact that that he's done the very gangster thing and jumped in and go, "Where's my peeps at?"
He's going to take it to the streets. All right, well, this show is completely out of control and we haven't even started yet. So let's move on here and say for what we started to talk about and then completely got sidetracked, which is so unusual for us. Thank you very much for that.
Every time in my ears.
I love it. See, I always pop the can before we start.
That would be because you're professional and on time. What I bring to the show is unprofessionalism and bawdiness.
Cool. All right. And that's why we love you. All right. So next Saturday, just to let you know, Platforms goes out as normal on Monday, live show, and it is going to be their first annual festive season show.
Festivus, and then the week after, get ready for The Drunk Show.
Which is the New Year's special for Platforms
Thank
Live.
You, Laura, for funding us on that. Anyone else that wants to drop us a little bit of coin towards that would be great.
We've got enough money from Laura for a nice six-pack of Corona, and now we need to get a bottle of tequila. Because I haven't told Josh about this, but every time we down a story, we're downing a shot.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so by the end of the show, it's going to be
messy.
So
I'm the designated driver,
right? You'll be the designated driver, and I
might have
you'll
be the designated walker.
I might have to leave my laptop at home that day because I'll be booting people left and right. What was that, you prick? Click, ban, yeah, take that.
Dave, you just shut the window.
I think we should just, like, take away Dave's admin privileges to the chat room on that day.
That would probably be best.
Probably be a wise idea. All right, so, but as far as the Geek Action Show, so Platforms runs straight through. There's no breaks. Everything is live every day, every Monday as normal. However, Geek Actually, we've been going a lot longer than you guys, so we are going to take a break. As I say, next week will be the pre-recorded show, but it will be an audio show only. There'll be no live show next week. And the following week, there is no Geek Actually. So there's no Geek Actually on January 2nd. We're taking 1 week off, and then we're back with a new format. Geek Actually is actually going to change. It's going to morph a little bit.
Dave is no longer on the show.
No, I'm no longer on the
Sorry, guys. Enjoy. This is my last show.
Awesome. We're actually going to morph it a little bit because it has occurred to me. It's occurred to me that predominantly we talk about film and television more than anything else and pop culture. So I thought, why not take us in that direction entirely? And nice. We're going to geek out on film, television, pop culture, and we're going to throw in a dash of tech every now and again, purely because we're geeks and this is what happens.
Can we talk about anime?
We can throw in some anime, and we can throw in all sorts of film, television, pop culture. Dave and I actually want to add a little bit more regular television to the show.
Yes,
we're going to drop
illegally downloaded.
We're going to drop games entirely because Platforms has taken that mantle and has run with it. So we're going to drop gaming entirely from the show. And as I say, the tech that we will cover will more or less be predominantly just the great internet tech war, which won't be every week because there isn't always a story. But we like watching that SmackDown happen, and so we will probably carry on following that piece of that little bits of news here and there. And then we will also bring up little bits of tech when it really does get under our goad, like today's story. So let's move ourselves into our news. And we've only got two news stories, and they are related. And they're news for us because, A, they're kind of tech-related, but, B, they are censorship-related. And you know how we feel about censorship. We are huge advocates of a free internet and freedom of choice and everything else in this show. And we have been harping on Platforms and... Sorry, I'll give you a camera. Unfortunately, it's the wrong country, but never mind.
This is the first time I wish that we were American.
Damn straight. Do you know what the one problem...
Because we would have freedom of fucking speech.
Do you know what the problem with this country is? And for our American listeners, their heads are going to spin off and explode at this point. The problem with Australia is that we actually have no Bill of Rights. We have what's called an implied Bill of Rights.
We've got the Bill of Mates.
And the implied Bill of Rights says, yes, we're a free country, and yes, we can do all these things, but nothing is actually technically down in writing, which means at any time, if the government turned around and said, no, you can't write that article, or we don't want that paper anymore, they're actually within their rights to stop us from doing these things. In America, the Bill of Rights, although used a little bit too much sometimes, does protect a lot of things. Now, one of the issues that has come up over and over and over again on this show over the last year is the fact that our video game industry doesn't have an R rating, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this week, the first story is that a discussion paper has surfaced. The government has put a discussion paper into the public forum, which I have actually read. I read it throughout the week, basically saying, do you know what? A new survey came out just recently that actually said that the average age of the gamer is 25. Really? They've only just figured this out?
Weren't we talking about that when I first started here?
According to this, this says the submission paper says the government has been, this is from news.com.au, by the way, says the submission paper says the government has been discussing the issue for some time, and they have. We know that the attorney generals who actually set these ratings in place had a meeting about this 6 months ago, and we're supposed to release a discussion paper about this.
Yeah, Atkinson's been holding off.
And it's all been holding off and holding off. Now, after this study came out, one of many studies, and I've actually seen this age go anything from 25 to 35. Mm. Basically, the government has now suddenly come out and said, oh, you know what? Maybe we should now do something about this. And so this long-awaited discussion paper suddenly just burst onto the scene this week without much fanfare. But it does give the public a chance to address this. Now, if you go to geekactually.com, we've got the links to the site. They have a pro forma document to actually go and fill in. Now, please, we have said this many times, do not just write one of these things in and go abusive on these people. Have your arguments well thought out. Be civil, be grown up about it, and really put across your arguments as to why you think an R rating should be put in place. Mm. Now, a quote that I actually put onto the post on geekactually.com, I don't remember where I actually heard this quote, so I can't attribute it to somebody, but it was not me. But it's not mine. Basically said, banning film games and movies is like not allowing us to eat steak because babies can't chew. And it's such a great quote because it's so true. They're basically saying, we don't want an R rating because kids might get hold of it. The R rating is to stop the kids from getting hold of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole point.
I love that that's Atkinson's argument too. Is like, if we do have an R rating, then they'll get a hold of it. Really? So it works for alcohol and tobacco and porn, but for some reason video games, which are of course by far the worst of the bunch,
absolutely
won't be able to be policed.
And there was actually one of the senators who's one of the religious right senators, and it's on the post, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, I didn't print that article up unfortunately, but he actually went on about saying, yes, the R rating is great, we can stop them from buying them in the stores, but once they get home, what happens if the older brother is playing and the younger brother wants to play and he comes in and joins the game, how do we police that? Well, you don't actually,
exactly.
parents do.
Fucking know? Hell, let responsibility go where it needs to go. I mean,
absolutely.
This is the biggest problem with these sort of... Sorry to cut you off, Dave. But,
no, please.
This is the biggest problem with these type of things because you've got... And you know, to our religious viewers, please do not take offense. But it's usually the old world religious groups, the moral upright brigade who get organized and do this type of shit and help push it through and spend all their time, because they got nothing else to do in their lives, so they focus on this. And it's usually then the gamers and young generation, or not young, but you know what I mean, like the generation in question, lets it slide because they don't know how to act upon it, or they're waiting for somebody else to act upon it. And it's a real shame that the way... it's kind of a bad week, because we had a win and a loss in the games industry, which is... I want to segue very shortly, but... Alien vs. Predator, which we knew got banned, I got a press release from SIGI yesterday saying that it's been overturned. So Aliens vs. Predator last week refused classification because it's horrible and will make children go out and turn into aliens and predators and kill Marines and shit. Mm. And now this week, and I should add, MA15 rating hasn't been cut.
No, in fact, I've actually got a quote here from the developers of the game. I believe they're called Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
The quote unquote, "We will not be releasing a sanitized or cut down version for territories where adults are not considered by their governments to be able to make their own entertainment choices."
And isn't that just, that is so lethal a comment.
I wonder who that's referenced to.
I wonder.
Look, I mean, I just...
There's another quote from them just to let that... He says, "We agree strongly that our game is not suitable for game players who are not adults."
it comes down to exactly that. But to be honest, my biggest anger towards this thing is just the ridiculous nature of our fucking MPAA or whatever the hell we have over here.
It's the MPAA, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, LFC, sorry, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, if you want to be, it's OCB, Official Classification Board.
So. Okay, so OCB, whatever it is.
OCD.
I think it's actually OCP. We need RoboCop to go in and take care of the fucking classification board.
Sorry.
Anyway, and like I was saying, the biggest problem here is not that. It's just the flip-flop nature of this fucking...
And this is not the first time we've seen this happen. Happens in cinema all the time.
No, but I'm saying that, look, this is happening in games right now, and you're giving us one thing, saying that this is banned completely, it is unfit for people to see or whatever, and then 1 week later, it's cool, fine, we'll release the uncut version. No. Where is the lines?
Yeah.
Where is your way of rating this?
Let's not forget that the film Ken Park, when it came to Australia, was originally passed with an R rating on its artistic merit, and then a week later they banned it. And there was that huge stink that got raised. Remember where they were having illegal screenings of it, and people saying you should let this go through and blah blah. And yet the government overturned its own rating. Baise-moi. The French film about rape, which had the hardcore sex, was passed. It got a cinema screening. It showed for a week, and then the government said, "Oh, actually, we have to take that off." What? They didn't watch it the first time through?
No, I mean, they did the same thing in the games industry with Fear 2 when I can't remember who distributed it, but they put it in for classification. They were like, the same story. No, this is horrible. It's horrendous. A week later, exactly the same game. You know, to me, it just... I'm going to sneeze at the moment. I just think it's a terrible thing that there doesn't seem to be any basic guideline. They just, they see, I think they might have like a dice and they just rolling it. Refused. Mm-hmm. You know, the next one I'm looking for is, you know, like Mario will be refused classification for cruelty to animals because, you know, he's jumping on little birds and mushrooms and hitting just turtles and
now,
shit.
Now, last week on platforms... platforms. I actually did mention a site that you can go to find out all of the refused classification stuff and the grounds on what it was refused classification, things that were modified and so forth. That site, by the way, is actually called refused-classification.com. And if you go to refused-classification.com, all the games, movies, literature, books, everything that gets refused classification or gets rated through the OLFC, you can actually see why and what the grounds are. And it's very interesting to have a look at. A lot more stuff is being refused classification than you actually think. Only the high-profile stuff is actually being mentioned. But there is regularly, every single day, 3 or 4 or 5 items being refused classification. Most of it is porn, granted, because we have very, very strict ratings on our X. So X-rated films can be sold, as we said, through the Australian Capital Territory. But we have such strong restrictions on that X rating.
Do you know
nothing that shows violence. One example was the film Pirates is actually...
Damn it, you stole my line.
Got way ahead of you. The film Pirates is technically banned in this country, even though it's just an X-rated porn film. Why is it banned, Dave?
Because there are two... Jason and the Argonauts-styled skeletons having a sword fight.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
The same thing happened to when I was interviewing Pierre Woodman, King of Private. He did a rip of Sin City, which was Sex City, and there was a scene in it that the guy playing Yellow Bastard had like acid thrown on him, and it burnt all across his face. That mean that the film got banned or cut down under. So... Double anal, you know, whatever else. No problem. That's fine.
As long
but a bit
as
of acid,
violence.
A bit
no
of acid
violence.
On a guy's face. That's terrible. We can't live with that.
It's a
fucking joke.
It is a really interesting site to go and have a look at. And somebody in our chat room, I believe it was Laura, says your government sucks balls. Yes, it does.
They could suck mine, Laura. Seriously, because this is ridiculous.
And yes, Ben from Ben's Tech Show has actually said, so if a server is in Australia, your government can tell you to take down an MP3 or an article down. Yes, that's why Geek actually is hosted in America. I don't host the site here. I host it in America because I don't want the government to tell my site what it wants to do. The only hazard of this, of course, is if our worry on the next story that we're about to come to ever came to its absolute conclusion and they decided that they didn't like people talking against the government, Geek actually could get banned in Australia. So it's one of those things. Anyway, so I do suggest to everybody, go and have a look at this discussion paper. We've got the link on the website. From that link, you can also find the other discussion paper that we're just about to talk about. But go to the discussion paper, find the proformers, write in and say your opinion. Now, if we lose the R rating because people don't get involved, gamers have no one to blame but themselves.
Exactly.
It's not only
and
that.
I will just stop entirely reporting on
no,
anything
absolutely,
related
no.
to this because it's just we lost because we didn't get
GetUp.org did a protest rally 7 months ago to protest the trials of the internet censorship filter. Nobody turned up. Right, and they promoted it everywhere. They've got 250,000 signatures on banning this thing, but nobody turned up to the protest. Why? Summed up perfectly by a Facebook post. They had a Facebook Facebook group page, basically organizing it. Some geek wrote in there and said, yeah, sounds really good, but can't be fucked. And that's the problem, is that the geeks of the world have to get more motivated. Get away from your keyboards and get out there and do something.
Isn't that just that's just a contradiction in terms,
I know,
though,
but you know what? Maybe it's time to get up and do something. You know what I mean? We're being given opportunities here. The second opportunity, and this is the one that steams me more than the R rating.
Now, what they should have done is they should have set up the rally in Second Life. Then everyone would have turned up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so this is now... Call me a cynic.
You're a cynic.
Thank you.
You're a cynic.
Actually, sorry, he's the cynic.
No, I'm the cynic.
In this particular case, I think I'm very cynical because that discussion paper for the R rating on games showed up, and I thought, wow, after 6 months of umming and ahhing about this, to suddenly turn around and release this so fast, wow, that seems almost motivated of the government, and now the cynical nature in me says it's a smokescreen because they're trying to hide this one. And they're hoping that everybody's so focused on that, this one slips by and nobody actually sees it. The trials for the internet censorship filter concluded. The results of it were kept secret for months and months and months while Stephen Conroy... I've actually got a picture of Stephen Conroy here. Let's bring Stephen Conroy up.
Let's not.
Here's the fuckwit. Anyway,
that picture I never get sick of.
Yeah, it's a good picture. So Stephen Conroy here, our communications minister, suddenly turns around with this discussion paper one day after the R-rating discussion paper and says, the trials were a complete success, and we're going to move ahead and we're going to take it to an election in 2011 to get the mandatory internet censorship filter put into effect.
You know what? Geeks everywhere will actually vote then.
Maybe. I hope so. Now, I've got several articles here. Now, the discussion paper, once again, is online. You can read it. It's 47 pages long, so I'm not going to bore you with all the details on that. I have some summaries.
You only have an hour left for
the Exactly.
Show.
So we got news.com.au basically says here that Communications Minister Stephen Conroy says, refuse classification material. Now, he's changed his tune just a little bit. Now, let's clarify. Originally, the internet censorship filter was going to be all the stuff that was on the blacklist, the ACMA blacklist, plus anything that could have been deemed objectionable, which was, at that time, something of up to including 10,000 more sites.
Have you read some of the breakdowns of the sites?
I have. I have some of them here, actually. And this is some of the stuff. So, mind you, the ACMA blacklist is supposed to be sites that are actually illegal material. So child pornography, bestiality, and stuff that is about, what is it, not acceptable in civilized society. So things like how to make bombs. Well, okay, so what we have on the ACMA blacklist, where's my list? Hold on, I have a list here. We have some sites that actually say, here we go. We have a site, this is on the blacklist currently, a site debating the merits of euthanasia in which some participants exchange information about actual euthanasia practices. Not actually illegal, mind you. This is discussion, okay? A site providing a safe space for young gay and lesbians to discuss their sexuality.
Wait, whoa.
This is on the ACMA blacklist. A site devoted...
Moral groups. Yeah. Oh, we can't let the gays talk. That would be terrible.
A site devoted to discussing the geopolitical causes of terrorism that published material outlining the views of terrorist organizations as reference material.
Wow.
Where are we? There was one more here that I really, really liked. Oh, here we go. A site that includes dialogue and excerpts from literary classics such as Nabokov's Lolita or sociological studies into sexual experiences such as Dr. Alfred Kinsey's famous Sexual Behavior in Human Male.
So what we're going to do is the platform for this vote will be we're going away from democracy now and sign in the Communist Party, and we
Basically,
will tell you what you can and can't.
They're already starting to call this the Great Barrier Reef of Australia, or the Great Firewall of Australia.
It's fucking ridiculous, man. It's going to make us like I'm sure that it was on the site, and I'm ripping it, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's going to make us like China or Iran or
Well,
Iraq.
according to the statistics that came out last year when they first started talking about this, mind you, the trials happened over last Christmas. Okay, that's how long it's taken to get here, right? Now, according to the studies at the time, they actually said that this firewall would actually make us more restricted than North Korea.
Wow.
All right, so they're now to be fair, and I hate having to be fair, but to be fair, the tone has changed a little bit. One of the things that the ACMA, one of the things that the Great Firewall of Australia was going to do was not only block the content on the blacklist, but was also going to scour the site basically looking for objectionable material and blocking stuff by keyword. And so, you know, typical censorship stuff. The problem was that everybody said this was going to slow the network down. Right,
because they reckon that it was going to slow down the internet dramatically.
Well, according to the new discussion paper, it is only the stuff on the blacklist. So it is only a pre-configured amount of information, and the blacklist will be monitored by a third party, not the government. Will be monitored by and it will be by complaint. So
that's
people
like
complain
a
site, and it will go on the blacklist.
It's like a choice between getting shot in the head or shot in the stomach and slowly bleeding out. There's no fucking difference.
No, there's no difference. Anyway, the point is that we actually we have a quote from Stephen Conroy who says, most Australians acknowledge that there is some internet material which is not acceptable in any civilized society. Okay, I can understand that comment.
Yeah,
I can understand that comment.
Yeah,
it's our right to choose.
Yeah, but
I can even
go so far as to say stuff that should be on the blacklist is stuff that is actually illegal under the laws of Australia. Child pornography should be on the blacklist. We don't... we shouldn't have a choice to look at that. Okay.
The one that, like, I mean, and I'm in no way actually, you know, a part of this group, but this is just a blatant sort of abuse of rights. Is the blocking gay and lesbian sites?
Absolutely.
What is that?
No.
Why is that on the blacklist?
Because I'm telling you, it's the moral upright brigade.
This is what I'm saying.
The fundamentalists who are getting behind and backing these politicians and giving them money and just saying, yeah, we just want you to amend this and just change a little bit of that. And I guarantee you then in the filter there'll be things like, you know, cut out Muslim, Jew, now, you know, woman.
Because, absolutely. You know, now, I'd like to point out that EFA, or Electronic Frontiers Association, EFA spokesman Colin Jacobs has basically said, given the pilot's modest goals, the modest goals were basically, will it work, right? Given the pilot's modest goals, it was designed from the beginning to pass, right? This thing was designed about, they only chose small ISPs so it wouldn't actually impact the network. They didn't have any of the major ISPs involved in this. They only were testing for the blacklist. They plan this thing to work. He says, although it may address some technical issues, what it leaves out is far more important. Exactly what will be blocked? Who will decide, and why is it being attempted in the first place?
Dude, all I can think of right now is Chris Rock had a great skit where he basically was talking about something very similar, where they were putting up all these things that, you know, were about terrorism and so on and so forth. And it's this great line where he's like, I'm listening real close because I know Jews and niggas are coming next. And it's so fucking true. Like, you just look at that and you're just going, there's no end to the thing. There's no, this is what we'll do. It's a gray area thing. And gray areas are the worst things to release.
Absolutely.
If they give me a full list, right? If they give me a full list, I'm never going to be happy about it, but I'm less likely to protest about it.
No, dude, the biggest problem about both of these stories and the thing that people really genuinely need to be terrified about is if they push through this, okay, there's going to be absolutely no R rating in the future for video games. They're going to push that through to other literature because they'll sit there and go, well, you know, if we can't have a double standard now. If we've done it for games, we'll do it for this. And it's just going to continually be more and more censorship and telling us what we can do, what we can't do. Personally, if this goes through, I will be Skyping in from fucking New Zealand. Yeah,
If this thing goes through, I think it's time to leave the goddamn country.
Because it does not bode well for the future. Look, and people need to get fucking active.
It is a very, very slippery slope that we're on because of the fact, exactly what you say, they won't put down in writing. There's no recourse. If you end up on the blacklist, there doesn't seem to be a way to actually then turn around and say, how did I get on there? How do I get off of it? What is it exactly that is offending
and
you?
Like, I mean,
because
the third...
they don't even tell you what's on the blacklist. The only reason we know what's these few sites on the blacklist is because an old version of the blacklist was leaked. And
this,
you know what this reminds me of?
This is like going back to the days of the Red Party. Like, yes! I mean, this is like people coming door to door, having no restriction on what they can take you in on. All they need to say is you were funding or
you
helping.
You have been reported.
You have been reported.
Absolutely.
And that's all it's going to come down to. And we are going to basically push ourselves into this horrible standard where they can just do whatever they want. And you know what? It's not going to stop. Like, I mean, we're going to get to the stage where who polices this third-party company? Are the police going to police
them? It's going to be our Homeland Internet Security. They're going to come in. I believe that you had a look at some tits yesterday. I'm afraid we're going to have to double-tap you in the back of the head.
Yeah, I like this one, actually. One of my favorite lines from Mr. Conroy is he said that about 15 Western countries had encouraged or enforced internet filtering, and there was no reason why Australians should not have similar protection. Aha! However, if we go further and we dig a little bit deeper, what we find out is that Denmark, Belgium, Finland, Italy, Germany, and the Netherlands, and basically all the others, operate similar ISP filter systems that operate from blacklists, which contain child abuse material. However, in those cases, the filters are voluntary, while Australia's is mandatory. So basically the filters are opt-in. In the other countries, not mandatory.
I'm amazed that more people are not freaking out about this. Like,
because
I read something, most
people don't understand it, and that's the problem.
Like, I read something in, I think it was the same place you pulled your article from, SMH or news.com, where they were taught, there was, a Sydney University professor, and he was just horrified at the concept of this going on. And, I mean, it's not only that, it's going to be stuff like And sorry to predominantly talk about it, but they'll probably ban talking about the Holocaust because it's not appropriate to, for young children to understand it. Or do you know what I mean? We're going to get like this watered down, fucking ridiculous view of the world. And it's just like knowledge is you're meant to grow as a person. Mm. You know, you're meant to be able to pick and choose what you want from the internet or from any information source and use that and then use your fucking head to make a decision. Not have the government lead you around like a baby going, this is okay, this is right.
Well, we'll take care of it.
But we are being called the nanny state for a reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that you bring up like the Holocaust and things like that because there's, as much as the TV show is usually not in any way sort of this way, Draw Together has a great line in it where they talk about basically the whole episode is like a piss take of the Holocaust. Right. And like it's pretty full on, but then right at the end of it, they bring this really interesting line where he basically turns around and one of them says, you know, it's not good to... you know, it's not good to joke or laugh about this stuff, but to forget about it is even worse.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the honest thing. It's like, yeah, let's just block that part out of our history. Let's block out the fact that we, you know,
absolutely. And you could argue that the Jewish community goes overboard continually talking about the Holocaust, but they needs to be remembered, you know. And
look, to be honest, even I'm bored with it sometimes.
Well, yeah, but they have to go overboard because if they don't go overboard, it's too easy for things to be swept under the rug later.
They just want to remind people whenever they give a shit. It's just like we've been a scapegoat already. It's like,
I mean, how many people actually remember about the Khmer Rouge and the massacres in Cambodia because everybody kind of forgot about it? Mm. They were massive. So, you know, you've got to admire the Jewish people for basically setting up the show as centers and stuff and basically saying, it happened.
It's not that we want people to remember. We just want to guilt you for the rest of your
life. There is that.
It's just like, anytime they're like, you're a fucking bastard. You do, Holocaust.
The bottom line is that I saw, I didn't have time to pull the audio clip, unfortunately, but I saw a senator... unfortunately, my mind has gone blank. I can't remember what his name was. But he raised a very interesting point. And this is what I said at the head of this when I said it could affect other countries. And all you Americans and English people and everybody in our chat room who is listening, pay attention. What he said was really, really relevant. And he said, all it takes is for them to actually get this put into effect. Get this put into law and have it start happening in Australia for all the other countries to say, oh, look, it works there.
Yeah. Who wants to be a fucking trendsetter for this sort of idiocy?
Absolutely. And so all it takes is for our government to put this into place, and then the other Western countries will say, oh, it seems to be working. Maybe we will bring that kind of mandatory filtering in, and then the whole goddamn thing goes to hell in a handbasket.
Call me crazy, but I thought the government were meant to, you know, listen to the people. I don't know. It's just a crazy idea. You know, we vote for you. We pay your fucking wages.
And you know what? How do you make politicians stand up and pay attention more than any other way? When the election comes. Now, this is very, 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 very important. This issue does not become mandatory until after the next election. They're taking it to an election.
You know, I honestly, I pray to God, the Jewish God, not your fake God, that
the Hebrew hammer.
I will bring down the Hebrew hammer on this government, I'm telling you. Now, I hope to God that it becomes the main talking points for them for the next election for the government, and they get fucking rousted, man. I would love to see that happen. It's like, well, you thought you had a good idea? See you later.
The only problem I have with that is that means that we may end up getting a conservative government back in again, bothers me even more. But
yeah, but you know what? If we've got at least a free internet for a while and whatever else, you know, we can worry about the rest. And then you and I can start a revolutionary party and we'll just bomb
the government. Well, hopefully by then the sex party will actually have gotten some ground. They actually have quotes in here as well. They actually have mentioned, they've actually done a lot of talking about this, which I'm sure they have because it's kind of what they stand for. But where is it? There's actually a wonderful quote here. From the woman who runs the Australian Sex Party. Where is it? I've lost it now. I've highlighted all this stuff, and now it seems to have all disappeared on me.
Yay.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. But basically, yeah, they were going on about it as well, saying that, you know, can we please have some civil liberties here at some point. Oh, actually, I think it was them who were talking about, that's where I got that quote about the sword fighting skeletons.
Yeah.
They were actually talking about that, saying that this is ridiculous. Anyway, I think we've harped on about that. It is Christmas time, and we really...
And I just had to say, Ben, dude, that is the lamest Jewish joke I've ever heard in my entire life.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah. don't know. It's a little bit off color. Anyway, I
know look, a real Jewish joke is why are Jewish men circumcised?
I've just noticed that grumpy bitches in our chat room. That's Mirren, for those who don't know. Hello, Mirren. How are you? If you have the bandwidth, we would gladly bring you in. I can fire the Skype up.
Just let us know.
Sorry, she's already struggling enough.
Oh, she's struggling, is she? Okay.
She'll forget, man. She'll forget where she was, and then she'll get all senile and shit, and she'll wander off in a. She'll wander off watching Murder, She Wrote in dressing gown and nothing else. So that's the way Mirren rolls.
Okay. Why are Jewish men circumcised?
Because Jewish women don't accept anything unless there's 20% off.
All right, enough with the Jewish jokes. Oh, man. All right, look, let's move into some film. Let's move into some film because it was a big week this week. It was the week of Avatar. For those who don't know or have been living under a rock, Avatar is James Cameron's new film, which is revolutionizing the way that films are made.
Ben, wow.
That's just a new level of low,
that
dude.
That is fucked up.
Oh yeah, no, that's dark, man. That's dark. We're not even going to repeat that one on air.
No.
It is stricken.
We'll get
from
blacklisted.
The chat room.
Yeah, we'll get blacklisted.
Yeah, we'll get blacklisted for that one. That's a bit rough. It's all good fun until somebody gets hurt.
Oh, good lord. Anyway, look, don't worry. Let's move into
all right. Now, I thought what we would do to lead ourselves into our Avatar review this week is we would actually recount a little bit of James Cameron's career. Now, for those who don't know a lot about Cameron, he started his career basically in special effects. Mm-hmm. And he worked for companies that did special effects for films like Escape from New York, and he worked for the Roger Corman Company, and he was actually very, very clever at doing the stuff that he did. I was telling Josh before the show, one of the very clever things that James Cameron was involved in is, if you've ever seen the film Escape from New York, there's a sequence where he flies the glider into the city of New York, and there's that vector graphic representation of New York going by. Well, they didn't have money for computer screens and all that sort of stuff in those days, so what Cameron did was built a mock city of New York out of cardboard boxes and painted all the outlines with fluorescent paint, and then they flew a camera through the middle of it and put it on screen. Very clever stuff, and he was very, very clever, and he's always been very obsessed by technology and special effects. He then got into writing, and as a writer, he wrote things like Rambo First Blood Part 2, which, of course, he actually says the final script is very little to do with what his script was. He said that his original Rambo script was actually a lot more like Aliens. It was that sort of troop.
I knew he was an alien.
Troop movement, not the actual aliens, but the Marines. It was a group of Marines and so forth. And Stallone, of course, turned it into the one man army. You know, which is what Stallone does, because Stallone thinks he's a better writer than everybody in Hollywood. I would actually have liked to have seen Cameron's Rambo. It would have actually been very interesting to have seen that. He got his directorial debut in the early 80s. I believe it was 1981 with a film called Piranha 2: The Spawning. Now, for those who haven't seen Piranha 2, I had the joy of watching this week, and I'm going to play you a little clip from it. Here you go, Dave.
Oh, Jesus.
Enjoy.
Christ.
Yes, not content to have the fish in the ocean, they decided to give them wings and they attack on dry land.
And
so,
perpetuating the stereotype, we kill the black person first.
And the film starred a very young Lance Henriksen, of course it did, and it is truly, truly awful. Now, what was interesting about Piranha is the fact that the first Piranha, directed by Joe Dante, was so obviously a Jaws ripoff that Joe Dante took one look at the script. Roger Corman was the master of cheapies. Joe Dante looked at the script and said, "You got to be kidding. This is a complete ripoff of Jaws." And so he then turned Piranha into this camp fun send-up of films like Jaws. And Piranha 1 was actually quite a fun film. James Cameron didn't get the joke, obviously, and he tried to make a serious film, and it really falls flat on its face. And to say that I'm surprised he has a career after this film is not understating things.
Let me just counter that with Uwe Boll.
Well, yeah, there is that. Okay. Now, he did manage to have a career, and he came back. His second film was the low budget. It was about $8 million in budget. Low budget Arnold Schwarzenegger star called The Terminator. You may have heard of it.
No.
And here's a little bit of the trailer. I've actually got trailers and clips for all of these films. We're not going to play the whole trailers because we'll be here all day. But here's a little bit of The Terminator.
In this city, under cover of darkness, someone is stalking Sarah Connor.
Sarah Connor?
Yes.
Sarah Connor, 35, brutally shot to death in her home.
You're dead, honey.
You're dead, honey. Now, The Terminator was an interesting film because it was actually not very well written. It's got really clunky dialogue, but it was an eye-opener for its day. I remember seeing it at the cinema and absolutely loving this
film. And it had Bean in it.
And it had Bean. It was the introduction of Bean.
Seriously, I would make Hot Sweaty Man Love to me.
You know what? You may actually want to make Hot Sweaty Man Love to an awful lot of men. I'm getting a bit worried about you, actually.
And the bear's hungry, he'll eat.
Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger was actually originally offered the Michael Bean role. And he didn't want it.
I wish I would. I want to see that movie.
And he didn't want it because he actually thought the Terminator was a much, much more interesting role for him. And it was
Much less dialogue.
And it was the right choice because at that time, he really didn't speak a lot of English. And his only role prior to that had been the Pumping Iron documentary, Stay Hungry, which was about bodybuilders, funnily enough. And Conan the Barbarian, which of course he says maybe two lines of dialogue in the entire film. So it was a very wise choice for him to want to be this unstoppable robot machine. And it also started a relationship between him and Cameron that lasted for three more films. I think The Terminator was groundbreaking in its day. Some of the effects don't really hold up today, and we look at them and we go, ooh, some stop-motion animation that looks a bit shaky, but it is so much fun. And what was very interesting, Slash Filmcast actually talked about this a few weeks ago, and they said, when you actually look at The Terminator, in effect, it is actually a horror film. And it follows exact horror film format. Unstoppable killer keeps coming no matter what happens, blah, blah, blah. He rolled that into this action sci-fi package and kind of subverted his own genre. So it was a very interesting maneuver on his part. He then subverted another genre following this with Aliens, because he took what was a gothic horror film and said, fuck that, let's make Marine Corps action film.
Hoorah!
Hoorah! And the Aliens was a absolute tour de force. Here's a little bit of Aliens.
Just tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study, not to bring back, but to wipe them out.
That's the plan.
All right, people, on the ready line. Fire me!
Yeah!
Fire me!
Yeah!
Where are you?
Yeah!
You got a ready line, Ray? Get down to die! Get on the ready line!
You know, Michael Bay could learn a lot from Cameron
on how to handle
military hardware and stuff.
Game over, man.
Game over, man. I was trying to find that clip for this show. Now, I think we can all agree that, I mean, Josh and I reviewed Alien on this show many weeks ago for Natalie Del Conte. And we both came to the conclusion, and Natalie as well, that we prefer as a film, just as a masterpiece of a film, Alien is probably going to stand the test of time and be this gothic horror film for the ages. But Aliens, for a completely different reason, is so much fun.
See, that says all the difference between us as a group for movies. Because, don't get me wrong, you can't discount what a brilliant film Alien is, but Aliens is by far my favorite of any of the films.
Mm. Oh, fair enough.
I love that. And, I mean, it's got Paxton.
Well, put it this way. I'll give
And Bean.
Paxton. Two, you're going to have orgies of hot man sex.
I would be the meat in that sound.
Oh, dear God.
Mirren
in our chat room also wanted to mention that we forgot to mention that Arnold Schwarzenegger actually played Jane Mansfield's husband in the telemovie about Jane Mansfield's life. Jane Mansfield played by Lonnie Anderson.
Was that a talkie?
It was a talkie.
All right. I wasn't sure if Mirren was bringing something from the silent era.
All right, so moving right along at this point. We have Aliens hit the cinema screens. Now, Aliens was an interesting film just in its production, because we also want to talk about James Cameron and his hardware. And basically, when he proposed a sequel to Alien to 20th Century Fox, they scoffed at him. Because you've got to remember that Alien, even to this day, the budget of Alien and its final take of Alien is kind of shrouded in secrecy, because apparently Alien went really far over budget. Ridley Scott never does that.
A movie over budget? Wow.
Ridley Scott never does that. But apparently he went really far over budget, and Fox has always been very cagey as to how much this film actually took, to how much it cost to make, and blah, blah, blah. It obviously made a profit because they came back for sequels, but they were shaky in the 80s. They weren't thinking about a sequel to this film. Cameron came along and said, I want to make an alien film with thousands of aliens and, you know, a Marine Corps and battles. And they kind of went, are you fucking kidding? This thing's going to cost $1 billion to make. And Cameron said, no. I can do it with 8 suits. Give me 8 suits, and he finally got a production budget. I believe Aliens was made for $18 million, final production budget. He got 8 alien suits, and he managed to make it look like hordes of thousands of aliens. And we're not even talking about mat work here. It's just the way he shot it. You actually never see on screen at any time more than 8 aliens. And that's very, very clever filmmaking. And he managed to bring in this film very low budget to the point where, you know, the scanner at the beginning of that film, he actually didn't have that in his budget. And his wife at the time, Gail Ann Hurd, who was the producer of the film, said, no, you can't have that. It's going to cost too much money to put that in. Cameron put his own money down. He said, I'm going to have that fucking scanner shot. And he paid for it to come in and do that shot because he believed so hard in it. So he really is dedicated. When he throws his mind into these things, he's really dedicated. The film went on to make hundreds of millions of dollars and really cemented Cameron into the psyche of everybody at that point. Which brings us to his next film, which was audacious. It was bold. It was very, very, very expensive. And mixed reviewed, which of course was The Abyss. Mm-hmm. Now, The Abyss was a grand undertaking. It also started James Cameron's love affair with underwater, because he has a love affair with scuba diving and underwater. And The Abyss, once again, technical challenges. He actually went to shoot the thing underwater. Mm-hmm. Unlike a lot of people who would say, you can't really shoot something like this underwater. We'll fake it. We'll do this. We'll do that. No, he wanted to shoot the goddamn thing underwater. And so they went to an abandoned nuclear reactor. And they built one of the largest water tanks in history, and they submerged the set, and they literally went for days and days and days underwater shooting this goddamn film. And apparently everybody came out with very bleachy hair because they had so much chlorine in the water, because it was getting disgusting, that everybody was kind of bleaching out. So we have a little bit of The Abyss here, and actually it's interesting because The Abyss was marketed on how big a production it was. If you watch this trailer, the start of the trailer is actually about how they made it, which is very unusual for a trailer to do that.
It began 2 years ago in an unfinished nuclear power plant.
In a world gone mad.
It became one of the most challenging motion pictures ever made. And on August 9th, the most original adventure of the summer will begin at theaters everywhere. From James Cameron, the writer and director of The Terminator and Aliens, comes The Abyss.
God, I hate that bitch.
Probably shouldn't have married her then, huh?
Hang on.
Made me wonder if James Cameron was actually talking about his own wife at that point. That brings us to a couple of the women that James Cameron has been involved with. James Cameron was originally married to Gail Ann Hurd, who has gone on to be a power producer in her own right. She produced and helped co-write a lot. In fact, Gail Ann Hurd says she didn't actually co-write any of the films. In an interview, she said her co-written credit would actually consist of James Cameron coming and saying, what do you think? And they're going, that won't work, that won't work, that'll work, that won't work, that'll work, and he go off the
video.
So she's a subby then.
She's a subby. So, sorry, you were going to say?
No. You guys covered it.
Okay. So Gail Ann Hurd, but she, Gail Ann Hurd eventually left Cameron. I'm sure Cameron is a very hard person to live with. He eventually hooked up with Catherine Bigelow. Catherine Bigelow went on to direct The Hurt Locker most recently, but also directed
Which is a wonderful movie.
Which is a good film. We positively reviewed it. I think we had some reservations, but it's got some great stuff in it, definitely. She also directed Point Break, K-19, Widowmaker, and so forth.
You had me at Point Break. You're going to stand here or jerk each other off.
And, of course, he left Catherine Bigelow and got hooked up with Linda Hamilton. Until she decided that she was a lesbian. So, and Linda Hamilton...
Or he drove him to, drove her
to being a lesbian. I'm not actually sure who he's hooked up with now, but she's obviously a saint to put up with some of the stuff that he gets up to.
I'm sure that he falls asleep on a bed made of crisp $100 bills, whoever he's with.
Now, you also notice the wonderful statements in that trailer. You know, the most ambitious film ever made, the biggest film ever made. These are often superlatives that are thrown at Cameron. Cameron always makes the biggest film, spends more money.
Or Kevin Costner.
Or Kevin Costner. Well, actually, I think Cameron's always beaten even Kevin Costner. So, and in fact, The Abyss was incredibly expensive. And when it first came out, it came out in a cut form. And the cut form made very little sense. And a lot of people kind of went, really? And
what, I was a studio getting involved in fucking a movie?
Pretty much.
Fancy that.
And I always felt with The Abyss that the first half was better than the second half. I thought all of the stuff with the underwater miners and everything was all really well conceived. And the dialogue is fantastic. And it really works well. And as soon as they introduce, spoiler alert for a film that's 20 years old, as soon as they introduced the aliens into it, I felt the film kind of falls apart. It's almost like they wanted to put in this fantastical thing, but they hadn't really thought it through completely. The director's cut that came out on video and then later DVD, and I don't know if it's out on Blu-ray or not, but it actually helped fill in the holes a little bit. And what's actually even better is if you've read Orson Scott Card wrote the novelization of it, and he doesn't write novelizations, and yet when he was offered to do it, he said no, he didn't want to do it because he doesn't do novelizations. And they said, no, we give you carte blanche, you can actually do whatever you want with it. And so he actually took it and he wrote a novel, not a novelization. He follows the story, he follows the script, but he actually puts in all this backstory and everything around the story as it's happening, and it makes a lot more sense. You actually get their internal dialogue and everything. And the book is actually really good to The Abyss. So if you are a fan of The Abyss but still don't understand it, the book might help.
You don't need to not understand aliens. There you go. Boom. Done.
Just so that you know, Dave, Susie Amos, what his current wife is.
The singer?
I'm not sure what she does.
That would be Tori Amos.
That's Tori Amos. Who's Susie Amos?
Amos.
Somebody find out who Susie Amos is.
I've got it right here.
Is she actress, director?
She's an actor. She's been in a lot of things. That's it. She's an actor. She was in Twister. She was in Titanic.
I know her. Yeah, I do know her. Yes, okay. Cool.
Usual Suspects as well.
Very good. All right, W.R. Robb has basically said best special effects for The Abyss, like the water arm or the water tentacle. Now, the water tentacle was incredibly important. This was a groundbreaking moment in film. Nobody had ever seen or used CG to that extent before. And Cameron was actually testing a theory because he had the Terminator 2 at the back of his head, but he didn't know if it was going to work. Now, with the water tentacle in The Abyss, if that scene didn't work or they couldn't pull that off, he could cut that out and it wouldn't affect the film. Yeah. And so it didn't matter. If it worked, he could then move on to do the liquid metal man in Terminator 2. He couldn't do Terminator 2, and if it didn't work, he couldn't do a film. So he had to test with the water tentacle. It worked remarkably well, and it managed to let him go on and make Terminator 2, which, let's get back to those superlatives, at the time, the most expensive film ever made.
Mm-hmm. Well, Terminator 2, I remember going to the cinemas and seeing that, and that just destroyed me. It's very rare that I go and see a movie more than once, and I think I saw it like 4 or 5 times. It was something
I remember
ridiculous.
Seeing Terminator 2. I actually remember seeing Terminator 2 the first time I saw Terminator 2. There was a small part of me that was actually slightly disappointed. And it wasn't on the visuals. It wasn't on the grand scale of the film. It was dazzling to watch and everything else. But I was such a fan of the Terminator, of the first one. I just felt that some of the heart from the first film had been taken out of it in favor of its grandioseness, and so because the Terminator is essentially a very simple story, and to turn it into this grand, almost operatic size thing with the two robots attacking each other and everything else, I just kind of felt it lost something in the translation. However, on multiple viewings, it actually becomes a much better film, and I actually love the Terminator 2.
See, you and Josh, too much of the thinking when it comes to
me. Well, it's interesting, Dave, because for once I'm on your side. No, I didn't get any of that at all. It was one of the first movies where I really saw them take it up a notch. Like, yeah. Really.
Oh, no, technically, absolutely.
No, but I'm even talking story-wise. Like,
yeah, I agree.
To bring an unstoppable force and pit it against an unstoppable force really was
against
exactly what...
Against an immovable object.
Like, I mean, that was the first sequel that I ever remember liking. I remember I watched that film and I was just like...
Empire.
All right, fine. I don't count that. That's Star Wars. That's a whole nother breed of film.
It's its own genre, man.
It's its own genre, man. It's its own thing.
It's its own universe.
Yeah.
It is, of all of the three films that they made.
All right. So here's a little bit of Terminator 2 for those in our chat room to have a look at. Wow!
These were taken at the West Highland Police Station, 1984. You were there.
Same model.
These were taken today.
You have to let me see my son. He's in great danger.
Same voiceover.
New mission. Once, he was programmed to destroy the future.
You don't know what it's like to try to kill one of these things.
Now, his mission...
Get down!
...is to protect it.
Mom!
Come with me if you want to live.
I think we'll leave it right there. Come with me if you want to live. No, so don't get me wrong. I love Terminator 2, all right? I'm not trying to disparage Terminator 2. I love it. But there is a part of me, I think it's probably because of my age and the fact that I did see Terminator at the cinema many times. I love the first Terminator. And so there was part of me where you sit there and go, it's not quite the same film, you know? And so...
I think for me, it the big difference is that... It's kind of the same thing as you were saying, Alien versus Aliens, as Terminator versus Terminator 2.
Yes.
It's like both sequels. I mean, you're a horror guy, I'm an action, and the same with Josh.
Well, no, I'm not really a horror guy. Josh is a horror guy. I'm an action-y guy.
You watch...
Yeah, I watch horrors, but I'm not...
I'm the action guy, shut up.
I would much rather watch a shit blow-up movie than a horror movie.
Me too.
Yeah.
Well, then you just destroyed my point.
Yes, I think you have entirely the wrong impression of me.
Mother, yes. Anyway.
All right, so Terminator 2 came out. This is the film that almost destroyed a production company, which is the Carolco company, which ended up destroying itself anyway, but almost destroyed a company because it cost so much goddamn money to make. Everybody said this film will never make its money back, and of course they were wrong. It did make its money back.
I think it was a Brazilian dollars that it made back.
Yep.
It's Christmas, we'll let him get away with
it.
Yep.
I'm not going to say anything.
Excuse me.
Well, now, the interesting one that I have is the next one that he kind of did, if you put it in sequential order. What was everyone's opinion on True Lies?
True Lies? I absolutely adored True Lies. Now, True Lies is a really interesting film because True Lies is actually based on a quirky little French film, and it feels like that. If you actually watch the film True Lies... The format of the show, the actual structure of the movie, does not really fit action film structure. It's got this very long part in the middle of the film, which is him and his marital problems and, you know, that whole thing with her. And you sit there going... I sat there in the cinema watching it the first time going, are they going to shoot something at some point? Is an action film. And then, of course, it kicks into high gear for the ending. And you sit there, when you find out it's based on a French film, it's the same sort of thing that happens with The Fifth Element, the Luc Besson film. You go... It's got French sensibilities, and that's where...
Life,
life! Yeah. But here's a little bit of True Lies just to remind those people out there.
How'd it go at the convention, honey?
You were the big hit of the show.
It's fantastic.
It's I love the computer business.
For 15 years, Harry Tasker's been leading a double life.
Mr. President, one of our best men is inside.
Transmitting now.
Right on time.
I don't believe I've met you before.
Rehnquist. Harry Rehnquist.
Listen to the following code word. Helen. H-E-L-E-N.
Now, they're about to collide.
What's your exit strategy?
I'm gonna walk right out of the front gate.
May I see your invitation, please?
Sure. Here's my invitation.
Good. Right
out
the old front gate.
Can you lean back a second?
Mr. Tasker's office.
Hi, it's Helen.
Is he in? Harry's in a sales meeting, Mrs. Tasker.
It's not like he's saving the world or anything.
Well, see, this is the problem with terrorists. They're really inconsiderate when it comes to people's schedules. Could you press the button for the top floor, please?
Hi, Helen. Harry forgot something back at the office.
I can't sleep.
All right, we'll leave that there. Sorry,
I forgot how fucking awesome that movie is. You're a prick for doing this, you know, because it's like I have shit to do for the next 2 days, and I'm going to do nothing because I'm going to be watching Terminator, Aliens, Terminator 2, this.
I've actually spent the week watching James Cameron movies and for this very segment, and the one I didn't get to was True Lies because I actually watched it not that long ago, and I thought, I don't need to watch that one again. I watched it just recently. Now I want to see it again.
Look, for me, it had Eliza Dushku as his daughter, yep. As a very young Eliza Dushku. You had Jamie Lee Curtis hilariously doing a striptease and still looking incredibly smoking.
I still cannot. I'm sorry. That's the one bit of the movie. I don't know whether it's just because I'm from a different generation, but I just looked at that bit and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to vomit. I'll be back.
Oh, for goodness.
No, and, dude, she is so unattractive to me. I cannot.
Oh, I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, you went around trading places, man. So
I love any movie she's in. She's funny. She's interesting.
That body,
but she
is
not attractive.
Unbelievable.
Oh God.
And to be honest, the main reason, besides, you know, like all the usual stuff, Tia Carrera, Tom Arnold, you know, great support cast and everything.
Tom Arnold, actually the best thing Tom Arnold ever.
Thank you. It's the only thing I like Tom Arnold.
The thing that I love about this movie more than anything, and it's been my biggest gripe in every fucking action movie that has ever been made, which is you've got a secret agent or some guy, he runs around with a little pea shooter of a pistol, popping guys with like Gatling guns, and then he doesn't pick up a fucking weapon. And the second that Arnie storms that compound, he starts shooting guys, pops his foot down on a plank, an AK pops into his hands, rips one off the wall. I was just like, oh, thank God, somebody finally fucking did it.
Absolutely.
And that was it for me.
Great fun. I actually have seen True Lies many, many times. True Lies also marks the next stage in the evolution of James Cameron's technology. It was around this time that James Cameron decided, up to this point he'd been using Industrial Light and Magic, he decided to form his own special effects company, and he formed a company called Digital Domain. And Digital Domain, that was based in Venice Beach in California, went on to do special effects for films like Apollo 13, and it also went on to do, of course, Titanic, which was kind of why it was formed. But they did all the effects work.
Again, him thinking in advance.
Absolutely. They did all the Hawker Harrier stuff and that bridge stuff in Florida.
That bridge thing was fucking amazing, man.
Digital Domain was probably the closest thing ILM at one point had to competition. Cameron was right there with his finger on the pulse. He was hiring it out to other companies like Apollo 13 and so forth to get the business up. He has since actually sold off Digital Domain. Mm. And who is it that owns the majority of Digital Domain now? Michael Bay. So,
and that's why they suck.
And what's funny about it, though, is that Michael Bay still uses other special effects companies, though. Transformers was Industrial Light and Magic.
Look, he doesn't need help with special effects. What he needs to do is assign a script doctor, like several of them, because his scripts are in
that's
in
the thing.
Flatline.
I mean, this isn't a Michael Bay thing, but the argument that we've always said about Michael Bay is the guy knows how to put together an action sequence. He doesn't know how to tell a story.
Yeah.
No. And, you know, that's his biggest problem. But anyway, James Cameron does know how to tell a story, and he told a very, very good story with True Lies, and True Lies went on to make a great deal of money and was a great
two Brazilian dollars.
And it was a very big success because it actually appealed to both men and women, and you two are just having a field day over there.
It's just every time he drops that line, it's just he always gives me that look like, yeah, are you going to react?
He's the worst kind of comedian because he goes, funny, huh? Funny,
yeah, gonna laugh. I'm like Seth MacFarlane,
you
know?
I can feel it going in through the side of my head, even though I'm not looking. I'm like,
that's the secret with bad jokes. Yeah, keep hammering them home.
W.R. Rob says, well, Bad Boys was a good script. Yeah, he has fluked out.
Hey, Bad Boys was awesome. Bad Boys 2 was great. It was just like an hour long. You know, they should have cut it at the end of the drug deal.
And that's the thing, Michael Bay flukes out. Transformers 1, I love. Transformers 2 sucked, you know? I had no problems with Bad Boys. I had no problems with The Rock, you know? But it's...
Welcome to The Rock.
Problem with Michael Bay is he doesn't know how to tell a good script from a bad script. So he just takes anything that comes his way.
He just thinks, Michael Bay's biggest problem is he just thinks bigger is better.
Yeah, exactly.
And he doesn't understand how to tone it back. I mean, the difference is with all of these films, and eventually when we get to it, Avatar, and I'm not going to go into it, it's just that, you know, Transformers 2, 2.5 hours long. I fucking could have fallen asleep through the whole thing. Avatar, 2.5 hours long. Mm. Worth every second.
Actually, a little bit longer. It's 163 minutes.
Yeah. So it keeps it up there, and you know, long doesn't make a difference.
No.
You know what I mean? It's just if you got a good script, you got a good
script. Well, the Lord of the Rings films are a really good example of that. You can sit through a long film even without an intermission if it grips you.
It's like 160 hours for all three films, and it's totally worth it.
What, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, or something like that? You know, you just pack a lunch.
Right. I like what Rob's put in. He said, "You mean Terminator 2 had a script?
Transformers 2.
Transformers 2. I don't think it did. Anyway, so True Lies came along. We got James Cameron's got his new special effects company kicking along. He's on a roll, and so what does he do next? He decides to spend more money than any other filmmaker in history.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I have to take my headphones off.
Dave's going to step out on this one because he didn't like this. Josh and I will handle this one. Here's a little bit of Titanic.
All I can say is I was rooting for the iceberg.
Take a journey back in time in search of a mystery locked beneath the sea. On December 19th, you will be given the key.
We're going to America!
Oh, forget it, Boyle. You'll never get next to the likes of her.
Don't come any closer. I'll let go.
No, you won't.
You are not to see that boy again.
I'm the king of the world!
Oh, and on that note, I'm going to stop it. I hate that line.
But you can tell that it's shit because Don LaFontaine isn't doing the voiceover for the ad.
Now, while we're here, we actually did do a tribute to him when he actually died, but I think we should just mention that to rest in peace, Don LaFontaine, because he was legendary. And as you can see, his career spanned back a long way.
Oh, the guy, it's so funny, especially now when you see a lot of movies on Blu-ray or re-released, and you know they come with very little except for the original trailer, and I always go back and watch it, and it's just hilarious when you watch like a trailer for Die Hard or something. It's all Don LaFontaine, every single Absolutely. One, and it's just the same thing. One Renegade.
Well, he was the voice of trailers.
From the 80s, man. Yeah. He was the voice 80s of the
and 80s. 80s and 90s.
You got like crappy phenomenal. Synthesizer music going in the background, and
or they recycled the Predator music constantly. Almost every Joel Silver movie actually used the Predator beat as its for trailer music. Anyway. Titanic is a controversial one in the sense that people sit there and go, oh, I hated it, I loved it, whatever it was. I look at Titanic and I go, it was overly long. I didn't buy the relationship between Rose and Jack.
Why not?
Predominantly because I think that Leonardo DiCaprio came across, and it doesn't matter how close they were in real life, he came across so much younger than her. That it actually almost felt like she was playing with her little brother or something, you know?
She was just playing with a small toy boy.
Yeah, but it didn't work for me. That's the problem. It didn't work. Okay. I did not buy that relationship. However, I give Titanic the last 45 minutes. The last 45 minutes is remarkable. The sinking of that ship is phenomenal. And it's just, it's an emotional roller coaster ride. It is actually, you sit there, the characters on the deck, the band playing on, the people sliding down the deck. That set was phenomenal. I mean, he went out and built, I think it was 3/4 size rear end of Titanic out in the Mexican. He once again built the world's largest water tank, and out in
he
Mexico.
Has a thing with large water tanks.
He does. He's got a thing about large water tanks. He went out and built it, and that set, that location in Mexico is now still being used by lots of people because it's there. Waterworld used it as well. So because there's this huge tank and facilities out in Mexico now, the facilities that Cameron built. So
I would have much preferred to see it from the viewpoint of the iceberg. And have it a malevolent iceberg that's seeking out Leo.
So it's like deathbed, like some demon died on it or something like that. And
yeah, I don't know. It's like maybe it's an alien from the abyss that got frozen and then became. It was vengeful.
When they get frozen, they go vengeful.
Look, I've
this storyline, dude. You and me should do the geek cut of this movie.
I've seen Titanic, and I'll tell you now, it was like 18 hours of my life I will never get back. And I'm very, 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 well, it felt like 18 hours. Mm. I was very, very sad. I remember I was watching it with my ex-wife, and she was just like swooning and everything. And I was, as you said, there were a lot of emotions. I had a lot of bowel movements because of it. And I hurled constantly.
Well, you're not alone because Mirren in our chat room is basically saying she hated this film, couldn't stand it, there's nothing about it she liked. And it's true. It's a love-hate relationship. I look at Titanic for what it is. And
I just have a hate.
And I just look at Titanic and I go, I don't buy a lot of the relationship. I think there's actually a lot of bad acting. And Billy Zane is awful.
I was rooting for him too, though.
But he's awful in the role. I mean, he's just such a... I was saying, one of the things I was talking with my lovely wife, Katie, we were talking about this week, actually, when we were talking about putting this show together. And I was saying about Titanic, because she actually quite likes Titanic.
Of course she does.
Because she likes romances and stuff like that, epic romances and so forth. And I said, the problem is, though, that the bad guy wasn't... if Billy Zane had been underplayed, if his character had been more grounded in reality, we might have actually thought, oh, he's quite charming at first, and then seen him for the bastard that he was. But Billy Zane walks onto the screen, and from the minute he walks on the screen, he's the mustache-twirling, bad guy, and we don't believe anything that comes out, and we don't believe why the mother would like him, we don't believe anything about his character, because he's a cartoon character. And for a film that is trying to be as realistic as possible, he is a cartoon character, and it doesn't work.
I equate this film to Twilight. That's how I feel about it.
In many ways, I agree with you.
I would, and to quote Louis C.K., I would rather run headfirst into an AIDS tree than ever watch this film again.
Okay, well, fair enough.
AIDS tree.
An AIDS tree. It's pretty good.
Anyway, look, I think...
Katie heard that, Dave.
I love Katie, but, you know, I'm sure she questions a lot of my movie choices, and I question hers.
I wouldn't put it in the same classification as Twilight. I think that's an incredibly over, like, that's incredibly overstated.
No, I said there's parts of it. I agree. The fans of Titanic, the ones who love Titanic, tend to be the same kind of fans who would be the rabid Twilight fans. Those, it's the young girl market. They love the romance of it. And so
but on. I have to say that as a Friday night date movie, take aside the Oscars and so on and so forth, I totally agree. That last 40 minutes is mesmerizing.
Absolutely.
Like, it is brutal. Like, I mean, I think that's probably the reason I liked it more, because I've had to sit through all this, like, I'm not going to say bad, but definitely dodgy love romance bits. And the typical, what I call the James Cameron journey, which is the, you know, boy meets girl, boy, girl go through world, you know, sort of collapses. They fight their way through
which
love
is, funnily
and romance.
Enough, going to repeat itself in a few
minutes.
We will
come back to that. But anyway, and you know, like, that last 40 minutes, like you're saying, the scenes with the band playing, the constant, you know, sort of horror which is going on around them, that is a brilliant piece of work, that entire scene.
And the attention to detail, once again, it's the same thing that we come across with Avatar. His attention to detail, everything about Titanic is historically accurate, down to the plates and the gilding that was on the plates. He is a perfectionist, there is no doubt about it, and he is going for trying to create that world as close as he can. Whether or not the film wholly succeeds or not is actually irrelevant at this point, because it goes down in history as being the billion-dollar movie. You know
what they should do, seriously, is they should. I can see it now. It'll be the fifth book, right? It'll be Twitanic. It'll be a melding of the two. You have Edward sparkling.
So basically,
Edward will be sparkling on the bow like this.
So we're replacing the scene. We're doing the movie completely over with exactly the same special effects, but we just have the two people from Twilight in it.
Yep, and he'll be standing up the front. He'll be the chick sparkling, and then the iceberg will sparkle, and they'll have a moment. They'll look at each other, and then hopefully they'll burst into flames.
Yes, no, Mirren in the chat room is basically saying it's been done several movies before, and yes, I agree. I actually think that as a film, A Night to Remember is actually better than Titanic. However, A Night to Remember doesn't have the visuals of that ship going down in that.
Titanic. I swear to God, I just said that. Nobody.
I know. We all came back to it thanks to Mirren.
Mirren put it in black and white.
I've seen it. I watched it. I think I watched Titanic twice, just to make sure that, you know, the bowel movements were real, and not the bowel movements, the bowel movement. And yeah, I just could not fucking enjoy it at all. Even like, I understand technically it's great, but my brain just would not let me enjoy it. It was just like, fucking this shit again.
We're going to have to agree to disagree, because I actually have seen Titanic several times. I actually own it downstairs. And what I often do, though, is when I watch it, is I tend to put on, I've got the deluxe edition, I tend to put on the second disc and just go straight to the last 45 minutes.
Well, now we get to the interesting bit, though, don't we, Dave? Because now it's more than just... there's a massive gap.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
we had a few documentaries.
This is where we get heavily involved in our technology side of it, because James Cameron, after Titanic, he won a couple of Oscars, did his embarrassing I'm the King of the World at the Oscars, which was just awful, and then disappeared. And everybody kind of went, what happened? Well, he didn't actually disappear. First thing he did was he was still obsessed by Titanic. And so he went and he made a documentary about the actual real Titanic. And this kind of got him hooked into underwater technology and, you know, what it would take to actually film this sort of stuff. He got hooked up with IMAX and started to really play with this. And then he went on and he made another documentary called, was it Something of the Abyss? What's it called? Ghost of the Abyss. Ghost of the Abyss, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah, well, which was another underwater documentary, which he actually started to develop this concept of doing 3D. Now, Cameron actually sees 3D as more than a gimmick. Cameron actually sees 3D, to quote him, he says, it's the future of cinema. And the problem with 3D up until this point has been that 3D has been, you know, multicolored lenses, and it's gimmicky, and it doesn't work very well, and you end up having a headache by the time you finish watching a 3D movie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cameron decided that he had to do something about this. He had to make 3D work. And so his company and himself set about designing new cameras. And if you actually watch the end credits to Avatar, you'll actually see the credit that goes by that says the 3D something rather camera by Cameron. So, you know, he's designed these cameras himself. This, all of this modern 3D that we're seeing, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, all of this stuff is all thanks to James Cameron. He has basically created this new form of 3D with the polarizing lenses. It doesn't drag on your eyes. It's really crisp. It's really clear. You get full color breakdown. And all of this has been leading to the fact that he wanted to make one of two films. He had Battle Angel Alita, a remake of a manga cartoon, and Avatar, which apparently he has actually had in his head for like 15 years. Now, he actually, an article I read the other day said that he actually went to his friend Bill Paxton and said, I've got two scripts. Which one do you think I should make? And Bill Paxton read the two scripts and basically came back and said, you make this one.
Which is funny because he's doing both.
He's doing both, but which one first, basically, was the question. And Bill Paxton said, you have to do this one because this one is brilliant. And so, of course, Avatar was...
So says Bill Paxton.
So says Bill Paxton, goddammit.
Yeah, man, Avatar should go, totally.
So, Avatar...
The other one, man, it's game over.
For the first time in 12 years, James Cameron has returned back to our cinema screens, and this is what he brings us.
You Jake Sully?
I'd like to talk to you about a fresh start on a new world. You'd be making a difference.
I became a Marine for the hardship. I told myself I can pass any test a man can pass. All I ever wanted was a single thing worth fighting for.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are not in Kansas anymore. You are on Pandora.
You should see your faces.
We have an indigenous population called the Na'vi. They are very hard to kill.
This is why we're here. Because this little gray rock sells for 20 million a kilo. Their village happens to be resting on the richest deposit, and they need to relocate. Those savages are threatening our whole operation. We're on the brink of war, and you're supposed to be finding a diplomatic solution.
The concept is to drive these remotely controlled bodies called avatars. They're grown from human DNA, mixed with DNA of the natives.
Marine in an avatar body. That's a potent mix.
You get me what I need, I'll see to it you get your legs, babe. Your real legs.
Hell yeah, sir.
Looks like you. This is your avatar.
Just relax and let your mind go blank. It shouldn't be hard for you.
Simple. I want you to learn from the inside. I want you to gain their trust.
You should not be here. Go back. All this is your fault.
I need your help. Outstanding.
Gotten lost in the woods, have you?
Did you forget what team you're playing for? Strong prey on the weak, and nobody does a thing.
You've got 1 hour.
You knew this would happen?
Everything changed. Jake, it's crazy here. Quaritch is rolling, and there's no stopping him.
We're going up against gunships with bows and arrows.
Well, I guess we better stop him.
take whatever they want. But we will send them a message.
That this is our land!
Alright, so this is, brings us to Avatar. Now, back in 1977, just to give you a little bit of a story behind this quote
back
I'm about
day,
to give
Dave?
You. Sorry?
Back in your day?
Back in my day.
Our day.
I was 10 in 77.
I was 5.
Brings into question one of your facts in your review. But anyway, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, I know. I realized that after I posted it. I was like, fuck.
All right. Anyway, back in 1977, in a screening room, a long time ago in a screening room far, far away, George Lucas actually showed the cut of Star Wars to a group of filmmakers, including Francis Ford Coppola, his wife Marcia Lucas, Steven Spielberg, and so forth, and basically said, what did you think? At the end of it, basically, Coppola said, this is shit and won't do anything. Marcia Lucas,
I remember that.
Marcia Lucas, who actually edited the film, said that it is a piece of junk and it's going to fail big time. And Steven Spielberg actually stood up and said, this film is going to make $100 million.
The Eye of the Jew.
And
fucking brilliant.
Fucking
man.
Brilliant. Steven Spielberg to this day.
That's why I love the man.
This is why Steven Spielberg runs his own studio, because yeah. He didn't spot it. When Steven Spielberg was actually in a screening recently of Avatar, he was asked what he thought of Avatar, and he said, the last time I came out of a movie feeling that way, it was the first time I saw Star Wars.
See, he stole my shit.
And he also went on to say it was the most evocative and amazing science fiction movie since Star Wars. Now, Dan...
And have I mentioned Star Wars enough? My friend George Lucas,
George Lucas
is
Star Wars.
And get ready for Indiana Jones meets Star Wars.
All right, Dave, take us away and tell us about Avatar.
Avatar is James Cameron's tour de force. I will say quite happily that this is the best film I've seen in about 5 to 10 years. I will stand by that.
Whoa!
Yeah, I don't give a shit what anyone has to say. I've mulled over
it. Apparently not.
I've mulled over it for the last couple of days and thought about the experience. And look, in a nutshell, what it is, if you've got this alien world called Pandora, and it's full of 10-foot-tall Smurfs, who you know run around? They're very much Native Americans. You know they're in loincloths. They have they're in tune with their natural environment, all of that. And of course the big bad corporation, which Cameron is a huge fan of. In fact, they reminded me heaps of the same corporation from Aliens.
I was waiting for him to be called the same thing,
And I was waiting for Bishop to come in. Just like this is the Wayun Corp.
What is it? The Wayun Yatuni or whatever.
Yeah, we're coming in to fuck shit up again. But basically, what happens is that you've got Earth is dilapidated at the moment. It's full of poverty, so all of the military corps have gone into privatization, and basically this corporation has a mercenary force that have come to this planet, and their main thing is to get, God bless you, Jim Cameron.
And they've obviously been established there for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I love is Jim Cameron's that they've come to get this rare mineral called unobtainium.
I love that.
which is obviously with Admiral Akbar from the planet Calamari. It's just genius writing that. I lost my shit.
Now, just to let our chat room know, we're not going to hit spoilers straight away, so don't panic yet.
But
well,
basically,
actually, I think the only one we really had to worry about was Lauren. She's gone to bed.
So. Yeah, but there's going to be people who listen. We'll give a spoiler zone on this one, so we'll just get to...
So your lead character is Sam Worthington. He plays Jake Sully. And
very well, I thought. I thought he did a really good job.
He was great, and he's a crippled... ex-Marine who's come along, and he basically this is a mini spoiler but not really, because his brother is killed at the beginning of the film. You don't see it or anything, they just discuss it, and because of the twin brothers and the DNA, he gets enrolled in what's called the Avatar program. So so he comes over to this planet, and it's basically you see the world through his eyes for the first time. You've got Sigourney Weaver playing the doctor who's pioneered this whole Avatar thing, which is they've basically taken human DNA and the local race, the Na'vi, they've taken their DNA, melded it together, and made basically a 10-foot blue Smurf that you can remote control.
Yeah, you remote control with your brain.
And he's basically sent in for a mission to go and make nice with the local populace and try and convince them to get the fuck out of Dodge so that they can mine the shit out
of it. And I think it would be fair to say that the plot is basically Dances with Wolves.
Absolutely.
With a bit of Last Samurai. He joins with the natives, finds out their lifestyle, and, you know, then kind of goes bush, you know? So that's basically the story in a nutshell. And we know how Dave feels about it, obviously. One of the best films you've seen in the last 5 or 10 years.
No, the best film I've seen in the last 5 or 10 years.
I don't think I would go quite that far. But I would say that think it is... I would actually go so far as to say that I think it is the cinema event of the year, no doubt. It is probably actually this one of the cinema events of this decade. I have to be very careful where I tread here, because I also think that Lord of the Rings rates up there as well, the entire trilogy. I think that the Lord of the Rings was a staggering achievement in its time, and that is still within this decade. And so I have to look at that and go, is it as mind-blowing as Lord of the Rings? It
Again
is as mind-blowing.
Again thinking.
I look at it and go, it is as mind-blowing as Lord of the Rings. I think Lord of the Rings is probably I prefer as a film. However, that being said, I loved Avatar. I just absolutely adored this one. I've seen it twice in 2 days. I saw it at the IMAX screening with you two, and then I went to see it at the local digital screen here, both times in 3D. If you're going to see this film, do not see it in 2D. You have to see this film in 3D. It was made to be in 3D. It is designed from top to bottom to be in 3D. And the thing about it is it never falls to gimmick. It never falls to gimmicky 3D. The 3D is there to make the world more immersive.
It is so wonderfully subtly done, the 3D. I mean, there's so many little things that you would miss it. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm going to start paraphrasing what I wrote in my review. But it really is, you can quite honestly forget where the real world ends and the digital world begins, and vice versa. I mean, the subtleties that they used with the 3D, like things just popping across your reach, or somebody out of focus to the left-hand side of the camera, or, you know, you'd have like a bush directly in your line of sight, out of focus, that would then mesh away. And it was the same feeling I got when I watched Beowulf. Obviously, Beowulf is far removed from this. And I read a review about a guy saying that the 3D has not come any farther than Beowulf. And I felt like shooting the guy. He was writing for The Australian. And I was like, dude, have you even watched fucking movies before? Like, seriously. But you got that same sense of like, invasion, when something is in your peripheral vision and it just skirts and you get that like spider on the back of your neck type thing. You were getting that throughout the entire movie, where you were just so immersed and your brain was sitting there going, I know this is not real. I know that this is all special effects, but you completely get absorbed into the experience. I mean, for me, and the reason I should probably stipulate why this was such an amazing thing for me. I felt, and I think we all did too, because Josh and I had a very animated discussion after the movie and scared off half of Darling
Harbour.
Our
cab driver thought it was very amusing, though.
but I felt like, a five-year-old kid again watching this film, and I was wide-eyed and in wonder, and fuck you.
You stole that line, and you know it. I said that.
I steal
anyway.
It from everybody.
Anyway, Josh, give us your opinions.
Look, I unfortunately, as usual in this situation, I was about to say that I will add a disclaimer that I may be either hit or at least yelled at by Dave Kaziki.
We're gonna muzzle Dave for a second. Have your say.
I'll give you a minute.
All right. Look, I want to say that I totally agree. And as Dave stole my line, I was the one that said I haven't felt like that like since I was 5 years old. And I totally agree with people when they say that it was like watching Star Wars again, for the fact that it really did take you to another world. It really I haven't felt that just complete amazement and just awe-inspiring creation since. It's something like Star Wars. Like, I mean, it really is. It's amazing, the level of detail. I went in and I've been looking at a purchase, which I was going to get David Beattie for Christmas, which was just the art book, which was this awesome book,
great,
which is this giant novel, basically, on the world creation, all these wonderful pictures. They have spent so long creating this experience, and it was amazing to see all the levels of detail, not just in the 3D, but in the individual creation, scenes, in things like this. I mean, it's always a good sign when someone like me, who is usually the biggest critic out of the three of us, walks out and the only thing I've got to say is, I wonder how exactly they justify the water coming out of the floating.
Ah!
And Dave just lost it at this.
Do
you know how they justified the water coming off the floating mountains? Mm. It looked cool.
Yeah, okay. And we've been over this.
No, you brought it up. Sorry, you brought it up. You must reap the fucking whirlwind now. What I took extreme offense to from Josh is you're in a completely digitized world with 10-foot aliens that you can create your own with giant walkers around floating fucking
mountains.
Which is
all science that I can at least understand.
And dragons and all this shit. And the one thing that you want to pick shit out of is fucking water coming off.
I'm just saying.
A floating mountain.
Okay, I can justify aliens in the fact that the genes and, you know, sort of worldly, these are world-like creations. Water coming out of a floating island, I just wanted to know. I never said I didn't believe it. I just said I wonder how they did that. And I love the fact.
This comment makes me just.
I'm not sure what every. Oh, thanks, Dave. Hello. You just killed all our mics.
I killed everything.
What did you just pull out?
Mics are still on.
He's pulled the headphones.
Thank you. Thank you. At least somebody does. But look, the only other thing I wanted to bring up that, you know, again, I'm going to get attacked for this is the fact that I didn't like. Sam Worthington, can I get my mic back, my headphones back, please, man? I got nothing. I can't hear anything.
I can hear again, so it's just his.
Yeah. But anyway, I didn't buy Sam Worthington. I hated his speeches. They felt they were just really forced. And like, I mean, okay.
That's because you're a Kiwi.
When I say that I thought Sam Worthington did a good job is I expected nothing from Sam Worthington.
No, exactly.
And I actually did. I thought he did a better job in this than he did in Terminator Salvation.
Look, Sam Worthington as the role, as the person they chose him for, the kind of dumb Marine, worked perfectly, right? The kind of stepping over himself, you know, sort of unsure of how to deal with the world. He did that fine. The big, impressive speeches he had to give to a whole thing... I wasn't in the movie at that moment. I felt that those just really didn't work. Like, I mean, if you take something like Independence Day speech, as much as, you know, it's corny and cheesy, he does it with a lot of force and a lot of sort of emphasis, and you can kind of buy it. Whereas when Sam was giving that line, I was just in there going...
You're not talking about the Bill Pullman speech in Independence Day, are you?
If you actually listen to what I say that it's very corny, right? But it's his delivery of the speech that I can accept.
I'll have to disagree.
I don't know.
What a surprise.
It was just an example.
I actually have to disagree as well. I think that Sam Worthington's delivery is better than Bill Pullman's.
And to be honest, I kept waiting for him to put on a skill. Every time he was.
I actually thought
speech
he handled his speech giving and his.
I
and so
totally disagree.
Well, I didn't. I don't think he did a magnificent
job.
I
smirked.
Well, see, I didn't. But I actually thought that he was acceptable in the role, if not believable in many of the scenes. So I think
there's always going to be disagreement. But that's the smallest out of the points, and that's all I'm going to raise. It's just there were a few little moments of his delivery that I just felt removed because I was just like, really? Mm. Like, it didn't inspire me. You know, like, I mean, everything else in the film is so mind-blowing
and
amazing.
As we've tried to
I
say
think that's
many
the only
times
reason.
On this show that everybody is entitled to an opinion, and everybody's opinion is valid because what doesn't work for you is going to work for somebody else. So,
like,
obviously...
I mean,
It works very well for Dave, obviously.
Exactly. I would consider myself right up there with the fours and the fives that are being given for this. I'm Australian Morning Herald at the moment, which gave it a 3, which I just thought was
ridiculous.
Insulting.
Yeah, I've had a couple of people, like, across Facebook, a couple of guys I know in the industry, and they're all like, saw Avatar 3, and I just got on and I was like, you're a fucking retard, Dan, and just...
Look, I mean, my biggest thing for this is you give ratings based on opinions, but there's certain things you have to take into consideration. So even though I have a few niggling pains, even though there was a few things in the movie that I was kind of like, okay, that was pretty amateur. Mm. As a whole, I haven't been that entertained in such a long time. Like, visually, I haven't been pulled into a film. I haven't believed the world. The moment that just made me, like... laugh and just sort of move in my seat was just the moment with and this is wrecking nothing for the people where he has to the last task he has to do to prove his manliness in this culture. That climb the world at that stage, just this amazing spire that we won't talk about in any detail because I really don't want to go into spoilers because there's a lot of people that haven't seen it yet. I remember just sitting there going, this is incredible.
Mm.
And anyone that looks at that and goes, yeah, three, I'm just going, you're missing the general point of this film. Yeah. Take away the you know sort of story and all that. To give it a 3 out of 10 is insulting just on the scope of what it.
I agree with you 100%. I look at this film and I go, this film, the reported budget is between $200 and $300 million. We actually have heard estimates up to $500 million in some cases.
I think it's actually $4 Brazilian.
$4 Brazilian. It is the one thing I will give this film is you can see every cent on screen. This film is amazing to look at. Industrial Light and Magic did a lot of the visual effects. Weta, you're in New Zealand. Is it Weta or Weta? It is Weta. Weta, the Lord of the Rings people, did all of the production design and the Na'vi and all. And, of course, their attention to detail is phenomenal, and it shows again in this. Just the CG work is, quite frankly, the best CG work ever committed to film.
Look,
it is remarkable.
Exactly.
I agree
with Josh. Like, you have to, just out of pure scale and what a technical achievement it is, you can't not give this film like at least a 4 just from the visuals.
Yeah, I mean,
it's that point that we made when we came out, Josh, when we said, you know, we looked at each other and we kind of went, is it derivative? Hasn't been done before? Is it Dances
and then
with
I
Wolves?
Shouted yeah.
Is it? Is it a bit silly? Absolutely on
Absolutely.
All of those cases. But is it ultimately absolutely entertaining? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think is interesting because all these threes and twos and all that, this is exactly what happened to Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like people coming out and going, oh, it wasn't that great. It's not that good. It's still going to beat you. Okay?
Oh,
so
beat
all
you
those reviewers giving
just
three.
So damn entertaining.
Exactly. All of those reviewers giving threes to it, I want to put this right out there. All you people are going to regret that when this movie becomes one of its times most achieved.
This film has the potential to hit the $1 billion mark, like Dark Knight did.
My prediction is this will be the highest grossing film of all time.
You think it's going to go?
Yeah.
Well, and funnily you should say that because one of the reasons why they say Titanic got the money that it got was because it appealed to the female audience. This does too.
And I want to bring up this point which we've all kind of glossed over, which is the female lead, Neytiri, played by Zoe Saldana.
Oh, she's brilliant.
Who was who played Uhura in the new Star Trek. The by far the best performance in the film, as far in my opinion.
This is actually so sensitive and so
the range, and you're looking at her and she's a completely digitalized character. And sorry, that was my mobile. Completely digitized character, and you'd felt everything
now,
that she
this
felt.
This brings up a very, very interesting
everything.
Point, Dave. And this is actually a very, very interesting point technologically. Once again, we talk about this use of technology. Robert Zemeckis is doing motion capture films. You know, he's doing your Beowulfs and your Christmas Carols and so forth. The way motion capture, for anybody out there who doesn't know how it works, is that an actual actor puts on a suit that has sensors on it. They actually act out the scene. It's captured by a computer, and then they put the digital character over the top. Now, I've had an argument for a long time that a digitally captured actor doing motion capture should be just as eligible for an Oscar as anybody else doing a role in a film, because that is them. It may be a digital character, but they acted it. They spoke it. It's their expressions. It's their body movement. They actually put that character to – they brought that character to life. There is no difference in this modern technology of motion capture than there was with Lon Chaney putting makeup on. Rather than wearing the makeup, they're putting a digital makeup on these people. Because Zoe Saldana, you're absolutely right, is the best performance in the film. She is touching. You feel her emotion when some of the more emotive stuff happens near the end, which we don't want to spoil, but you actually feel that anguish in her. You can see it. And the one thing that Robert Zemeckis can't seem to do is breathe life into his characters. These characters have life. You believe every step of the way that these Na'vi are real.
It's not only that, it's the little touches to it. I mean, look, there's no fucking Jar Jar Binks here. I mean, seriously, it makes that look so tired and pathetic.
The only thing that you could possibly think of as an equivalent would be Gollum from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and still not even close. I mean, you look at it like Sigourney Weaver looks like Sigourney Weaver, you know, the avatar of her. She's got the slight upturned lip. The mouth is the same. The teeth, the eyes. Everything is so spot on, and I mean, it really is astounding.
And I mean, don't doubt that that's Sigourney Weaver. You watch her as the Avatar.
You're totally immersed in the whole film.
She walks like Sigourney Weaver. She talks like Sigourney Weaver. She emotes her same expressions. Apparently the way he actually got the facial expressions, he's using, once again, James Cameron, new techniques all the way. And this is groundbreaking stuff because this was also the first film where he actually got to shoot the 3D environments in real time. So basically, on his monitors, he had rough renders of all the scenery and everything, so that as he's watching the scene, it's not just actors acting in a blue screen. Mm. He can see what they're actually supposed to be dealing with and the animals that they're coming into contact. No other film has actually been able to do this in real time before. Once again, groundbreaking. To get those facial expressions, to get that absolutely perfect expressions in the eyes, apparently all the actors had cameras mounted on like their heads. So that was filming their facial expressions and capturing every nuance of their eyes.
I'd like Zoe
cheeks.
To be mounted on my head.
Please. Anyway.
It had to come out at least once.
I know. She's stunning. I mean, and the one thing about it, too, if you look at any of the Na'vi, they have just a almost sexual grace about them, the way that they move and saunter about on screen. Look, I think it was beautiful. I like the way that all of the indigenous life and creatures and plant life that Cameron produced was so vibrant and colourful. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it was like a fractured reflection of what we have now. You know, you're looking at things going, okay, that's a horse, that's a monkey, that's a hyena, that's a panther. You know, you had all of these similarities that were totally new.
But then manipulated to six legs.
Yeah,
and
I don't want to cut off your guys' thing, which you wanted to talk about, which is their the wonderful way that they interact with the environment.
It occurred to Josh and I when we were watching this film that everything, and this is kind of, it's a little bit spoilerish, so we won't
look,
go.
Look, we're in spoilers now. Just
well, I don't want to go into too deep of spoilers because there's a lot of people who haven't, Josh is right, a lot of people who haven't seen this yet.
And we don't really need to.
We don't really
need
to.
It's the experience we want to leave for them.
Dude,
you know?
It's not like it's going to be a surprise. It's like
watching
Star Wars
as a common courtesy to a lot of people who haven't had a chance to see it yet. We'll mild spoilers, but we're not going to go through spoilers.
No. My big thing has got nothing to do with that. When it comes to a movie of this sort of large scale and so on and so forth, it's not that I don't want to wreck it based on storyline or anything like that.
It's the wonder of this film.
Exactly. I don't want to explain a scene to someone that will see it differently when they see it on screen. I don't want somebody to be waiting for something. This is an experience.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to even explain a single moment of this movie.
Actually, I would actually say to you that, you just... It's one of those films where you sit there and go, there's all threes, there's the four ratings, there's what we're ranting on about. Go see it, make up your own mind.
Exactly.
Just clear your head and just go and enjoy the film.
Because, I mean, this is the same reason I avoided all these, you know, new pictures of Avatar and blah, 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 blah. It's because I wanted to go in with no expectation and no idea of what's going on. I'd seen a few scenes here and there. I didn't want to know storyline. I didn't want to know how it all panned out. I wanted to go into it like I went to Star Wars for the first time when I was
a kid. However, we are going to spoil this one little thing because it just amused us as geeks. It amused us. On the planet of Pandora, one of the things that they talk about is the fact that everything is interlinked, right?
And I love that.
The plants. Oh, it's very much the whole Gaia philosophy, you know, where everything is all interlinked and so forth. But they take it to a literal linking in on the planet of Pandora. Their ponytails that you see in the trailer aren't just ponytails. They actually have like these little fiber optic-y connections inside their ponytails.
And USB.
Everything on the planet has a connector, and basically everywhere they go, they plug in. And this just really appealed to us that everywhere they go, they jack into their USB adapter wherever they go.
Well, all the vines on the planet are obviously a high-speed internet connection.
Yeah, it's like the entire world is connected via fiber optics. I love it. And they've got these awesome trees that just have thousands of links. They're USB hubs.
They wrap their little hubs onto them, wrap their little cords on them. It's really cool stuff. All right, I think we're gonna wrap up on that that I think that was great. I have one last thing I just want to say, and this is actually not about the film, but about the experience. We went to see Avatar at the midnight screening of IMAX. Now, I have never actually been to IMAX to see a feature film. This was the first time I've seen a feature film on the IMAX. The IMAX screen, as we know, is actually not a standard cinema format. It's a big square screen that shoots a big square 70mm print. And when you go see something like Dark Knight actually had four or five or six, I can't remember now, sequences that were specifically shot for IMAX. They actually brought out the big IMAX cameras and they shot those scenes. So when you're watching Dark Knight on IMAX, which I missed, apparently it was in the normal letterbox format of the film. And then when it hit one of those scenes, bang, the screen opens up into this huge frame and allows you to watch those scenes. And if you get the DVD, they've actually got those IMAX formatted frames on the DVD. You can actually
you
have a look
get
at
it on Blu-ray.
Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that Avatar was not shot specifically for IMAX. It was not shot with IMAX cameras. It was shot in what is termed as the Academy 2.35:1 ratio, which means that every inch high the screen is 2.35 inches across, which gives you that big, long, rectangle screen. Standard Academy
format. Or letterbox format.
Letterbox is only on video because you get the black lines. That's what the letterbox is for. On the cinema screen, you don't have black lines. It's not letterbox. It's widescreen. The standard format is 1.85:1. A lot of comedies and stuff like that are all shot 1.85, which is the
anamorphic
squatter squatter screens. And I have a demonstration here. I actually have the anamorphic is 2.35, and I actually have a demonstration of the screen here for you. I've taken a picture from Avatar and put them into the two different formats. The reason why I do this is because I actually was disappointed by the IMAX screening of this film. Yes, it was big, but bigger doesn't always mean better, unfortunately, in this situation, because what they actually did was cropped the film. So if you actually want to see this film in its true 2.35 format, you have to go see it in a normal cinema screen where they're going to project, because what you end up with is this. Here's a demonstration on the screen here. The top image is what you got at IMAX. The bottom image is what you actually get at a normal cinema. So you're actually losing it's about 20%, 25% of the screen on each side of the screen. It has to be reformatted, like what they would have to do for digital television. When they project on a digital television a lot, they pan and scan it down to the 16 to 9.
And a lot of people who sit there and go, big fucking deal, it does make a
it makes a huge difference.
I've seen the film. There's stuff in a corner that you might miss out, or they deem that they want to crop it.
Now, I've actually seen it in both formats now, because I went to see it at the local 3D screen, and I actually preferred the local screening to the IMAX screening. The other problem I had with IMAX, Josh had as well. Which is interesting, which is the screen is so big, even though it's cropped, it's big, that I actually lost focus at times. And
you'd fall in and out of 3D even with the glasses on, because where like an image would all
focusing
all
over
stagger,
the place.
And you'd get both parts of the image, and you'd kind of have to.
Where it was really evident for me was with the subtitles. The subtitles actually broke up at certain points for me, and I actually kind of went, "Whoa, that's a bit odd." And then you kind of stop for a minute and you focus and it all snaps back into place again.
That didn't happen to me at all.
So I had that minor quibble with the IMAX screen. I actually do recommend, if you can see this film, IMAX is also incredibly expensive for the experience that you're getting. If you can see this film on a really good quality digital screen in its 2.35 and in its 3D, I actually recommend that over the IMAX experience.
I would recommend and disagree for a mad surprise, the IMAX, just for the pure sensory overload. I love the fact that I was completely overwhelmed by this film.
But see, I wasn't. I was actually getting annoyed at the fact that there was so much screen that wasn't being projected on.
that was your mind, though. You're sitting there going, I could be watching the whole movie.
That's right. I could be. So what am I missing? Anyway.
Again, too much of the thinking. Not enough for the watching and enjoying.
I have to say, in a final point for this movie, my last thing is going to be, I cannot wait until it comes out on Blu-ray.
Mm. Absolutely. Look, I want to own this film. I want to own this film. I'm going to see it again next week.
I want to make love to this film.
Little Geek will be coming back. I think he's actually watching right now. Little Geek will be coming back to Sydney on Monday. We'll be going straight to the cinema because he wants to see it. I'll be seeing it again. And let me tell you, this film holds up to multiple screenings. I saw it twice in 2 days. Did not get bored once on that second screening. And in fact, enjoyed it more the second time around, because suddenly we're no longer going, what do you expect next? We now, over that part, we can now just enjoy the film for what it is. And it is still a great film.
And I have to say one last thing, which is God bless Jimmy Cameron. I feel that we're on a first name, nickname basis now after such an intimate moment. But God bless him for bringing back the fucking power lifter from Aliens.
Absolutely.
Mechanized with kick-ass fucking weapons and shit. That was just...
And a knife.
And a knife. And a gun. The second that came out...
I disagree with Umtrim3332. The movie is already overrated. How lame. Have you seen the movie? It is worth everything that it's being talked about.
Well, let's actually put that out there. Let's just hold on for a minute. Have you seen it yet, dude?
Let's not even put it out there. Let's just boot him.
No, stop booting people.
I haven't booted anyone for at least a week.
Yeah, exactly. No. Dude, until you see it, man, no comment.
Okay. All right, we're going to finish this up now for the day because we're running over as usual. Josh, where can people find out more about you?
Platforms, as it would be. www.facebook.com/platforms, which Platforms Live, which we are updating daily. And, of course, the same thing, facebook.com/geekjosh. Add me if you want. Join up. Keep up to date with what we're doing and what we're going. And, of course, the Geek Actually one as well, which I'm sure Dave will go into in more detail soon.
Not a problem. Dave.
You can follow me on Twitter, which is just www.twitter.com/DaveKaziki, or my blog, which is Feel the Awesome at Blogspot, with a hyphen in between each word. And you can see my musings on Australian Penthouse's website.
Fantastic. If you want to find out more about me, you can find me at Facebook, facebook.com/DaveMcVeigh. You can follow everything I do on Twitter, twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh. You can fan this podcast at facebook.com/GeekActually.
And you should.
We are actually looking for more fans because Platforms is running away with all of our fans. So come over and fan us over at Geek Actually as well. If you agree or disagree with any of our takes or would just like to say general comments on the show, feedback@geekactually.com. We welcome any comments that you have to say. If you are an iTunes user, please leave a review on your localized iTunes store. It helps us get up the ranks and gets us seen. And anything else we need to promote?
Merry Christmas.
Happy Kwanzaa.
While you're in iTunes and looking for a podcast to listen to, I would actually suggest the Real Junkies podcast with these boys.
Do they plug us as much as we plug them?
Every single show.
Oh, well, that's all right.
The Real Junkies podcast can be found at weekendronin.com or search for it on iTunes. It's a bunch of guys who really love their films and they get together. And in fact, Rob was just in our chat room. He's one of the hosts. And our greetings go out to the Real Junkies. And I would also say to you to go and Movie Fan House. I was helping them with their webpage the other day. It should be up very soon at moviefanhouse.com. You can also find their podcast weekly on iTunes and well worth having listened to as well.
And
also,
don't forget Ben.
And Ben Straw, who's in our chat room right now. Ben's Tech Show and
Mac Tip Podcast.
Thank you. You can find those. And he's also got another one. I believe it's called How to Podcast as well. So, yes, I do suggest all of those on the iTunes store. In the meantime, I want you all to go out and see more movies because you don't see enough movies and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you we'll see you in 2 weeks. There will be one show, remember, next week on the audio only. In the meantime, have a very, very, very safe and happy holidays.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year to all of you. And we will talk to you live in a couple of weeks.
Stop playing with your iPhone. Be professional.
We haven't even started yet. I'll put it down when that...
Be less professional. Oh, wait, that's my job. Mm. Speaking of less professional, eating on air.
I love the crunchy sound.
So hungry.